Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Broadcasting from the ESPN Tallahassee studios in Florida's capital city and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, this is the Scuttle Bucks on 97.9 ESPN Radio. The Scuttle Bucks with Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years and home of the nationwide lifetime warranty for new and pre-owned vehicles. BillCurryFord.com. Here's ESPN and Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
And away we go with the Scuttlebucks. Always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jeff, that's Tom. Well, the Bucks' future, the future of a lot of people, the future of the quarterback, the future of the season, direction of the franchise, all that stuff seems to be, like we're recalibrating, right? Here we go. We take a breath, we get the bye week, and now it's Tennessee, and it's Tampa Bay's turn to try to salvage something of a season, and they'll be going against a real good defense to do it. And unfortunately, an offense that decided to make the rightful change at quarterback. They went from taking, from leading impotent Marcus Mariota out onto the field to a guy in Ryan Tannehill who I think is a better player. Not a great player, but a better player. And so the Bucs defense has got to shore up some things as well. I don't know. You feel better after the bye week, Tom?
I'd say in watching Bruce Arians' media availabilities Monday and then yesterday, slightly. And I think one thing that you could point to is Jason Pierre-Paul's health. Apparently, he's taken full contact during the bye week, and he's continued to take full contact in practice this week. And it's going to be the key, the sequence between today and tomorrow. How does he feel after Wednesday, Thursday? And if he feels okay, he might be able to get some snaps. The reason I bring him up immediately, for two reasons. Remember, we restructured his deal that he can walk and is walking after the 2019 season is over. So you have a fully incentivized
contract.
He's trying to make more money and make a deal for himself somewhere else. And I don't think the secondary is magically going to get better. I believe that through a better pass rush, something that resembles what we saw for the first three, four games of the season, we will have a better defense overall. So if you can add Pierre-Paul into this equation, I think we have a chance to be better defensively. And then on the offensive side of the ball, it's the same thing as last week. The quarterback was already playing for his future in Tampa Bay, but now he's really got to produce in order to keep his future in Tampa Bay.
It's a weird stretch, you know, because I think after a game like that where he throws five interceptions, you're inclined to hyper-focus on a singular game. I think everybody's reaction was to that. It was an awful game, and it's right to say that, historically speaking, he has, on occasion, games like this where he gives you no chance to win. And we did say that during the last Scuttlebox. But I was also reminded as I went back that we're not too far removed from him being the NFC Player of the Week in a four-game stretch where he produced 10 touchdowns to two interceptions, and the Bucs were in position to win some games. So it is frustrating, you know, because you look at it and you say, well, that can't continue to happen, Jameis. And on the other hand, like we always say, the upside with him is really good. That's the difference between he and the recently benched Marcus Mariota. There were relatively, in the last year and a half, no upside moments for Mariota. Everything was dink and dunk, wouldn't stretch the field, got nervous about challenging down the field, a lot of injuries, wasn't a natural leader. With Jameis, it's the extremes. He's really good, and then he's really bad. And just got to cut out and mitigate some of the really bad. And I think that as we move forward with this season, this is obviously, as you noted, a referendum, but it's not a daily, it's not a weekly referendum, although we can certainly start putting pieces.
It will be in the media down there.
Oh, it's always that in the media down there. It's that way in the media across the country in general. It's why we make fun of it and we have shows and articles written called Overreaction Mondays. We get it. It's always that way. But for him, it's about putting together a solid collection of games with a much greater measure of consistency. It's not like he's going to go the rest of the year without having a bad game. It's not like he's going to go throughout the rest of this year and not have a game where he throws a couple of picks. He's going to. You just can't have the extremes. You can't have the lost look on the face, five interception, I'm completely in over my head here seeing ghosts. You can't have that. You got to have a measure of consistency. If he goes out and throws in these remaining games, you want to throw a hypothetical out there, I will. I don't know, 18 touchdown passes to 9 interceptions for about 270 a game. Plays pretty well and puts you in a position to win. Okay. Well, then they got a tough decision to make.
Well, but again, you know, this is something we talked about 2 years ago when the Scuttlebucks is on JoeBucksFan.com. It's that, listen, he had a fifth-year option, but then he's also under team control for a franchise tag beyond this. If they wanted to continue a one-year re-up, if they don't see what they like in the draft or the draft position isn't such that they can go get the next guy, like they don't see the one that they want, you can re-up him. You know, it's $27 million, but he's already making 20 and change this year, and you got some cap room coming now this offseason. Or you could sign him to a 2-year deal, which that's incentive laden.
You know, it's interesting for all the rumors down there about how the Bucks could opt to move on. Well, of course they could. It doesn't take much to pin that piece. From what we hear, they were really close to giving him that 2-year deal prior to that disaster in London, that he may have cost himself a 2-year deal. You hear that more and more as well. He was playing really well. They were about to step forward with the deal because they want security. They don't want a guy looking over his head, over his shoulder, excuse me. You know, you want stability. And then that game happened. And, you know, hey, listen, it's his fault. He had a terrible game. I mean, you got to play better. But it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think, you know, the hard part here is the first thing I hear from friends down in Tampa or people that, you know, we know and love up here in Tallahassee that are Bucks fans are, oh, this is an indefensible performance. I understand that. But the performance in Los Angeles is an unassailable performance.
Sure.
It's great. And he's both. And he's been both
his
whole career.
Yeah, for a long time. Yeah, he really has. And it's the hardest thing in the world to walk away from because it tugs at you. The greatness that you witness tugs at you. You think, man, what if he goes to a more stable organization? What if he goes somewhere where there's a level of consistency, a class organization that year in and year out gives itself a chance to win? What would that do for him? And would that draw out more consistently the greatness we sometimes see? I think the great fear for Bucks fans is that we know the answer to that. It would. It would. Just as it has for so many that came before him that run through this organization. This has been an organizational nightmare for a very long time.
I tend to agree with you. I don't know for sure.
I don't know, but I think we sense that it probably would.
Well, I think overall, this is we go back to the overall discussion of the team, which is what we said in the preseason. It's a flawed group. There are some areas where we're deeper than others. I think we would have argued wrongly in the preseason that we're relatively deep at wide receiver. We're not here. Perryman is apparently back and healthy, but what has he provided at this point in his career anyway? You know, Bruce said this week that he's played well, but not many targets. I guess. I mean, that's what we say about O.J. Howard in recent weeks. He's played well, but not many targets. And then you see the performance out in London when he's not ready to be the hot receiver. So maybe he's playing well and the targets aren't there. But we're not deep at that position. The offensive line played a little bit better than I thought they'd play out in London. And Jameis saw ghosts. Sam Darnold actually copped to what we think Jameis Winston is going through right now in the pocket.
Yeah, that was a mistake for a second-year player to do that on Monday Night Football with
so
mic'd up
real quick. I know this is a larger NFL topic, but did you see the ESPN story on it yesterday? ESPN.com. They were running for the hills to make sure that they were not the ones blamed by the NFL. But apparently, if you're mic'd up in a game, NFL Films has a representative there that green lights whether or not that quote can make it to air.
Wow.
Not the network.
Rolled him.
So ESPN can say, all right, you have the mic, and everybody agrees. But there actually is an intermediary from NFL Films who says, okay, yeah, you could put that on in the course of the broadcast.
Yeah, but don't use this one. Let's not ruin the kid's career.
But ESPN was very quick to say, whoa, your people said that he could say he saw ghosts. Hopefully Jameis sees fewer this part of the season.
One piece of news, of course, is that the Patriots, the aforementioned New England Patriots, did reach out to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And what I would advise every organization to do if the New England Patriots call you is to say no, because they're going to win the deal. You are going to be made a fool of. I don't care if you look at the deal and say, oh, this is a no-brainer. What is New England doing? They know more than you do. They're going to turn this into their advantage. You're going to get bent over. Don't do the deal.
Yeah, it sounds like a baseball franchise over the causeway in St. Pete or Rays, the Howard Franklin.
The Rays make an amazing group of trades over the last 5 years, time and again, getting the better of it, and it's so that they can compete in a division where people spend $200 million on their payroll, and the Rays are out here throwing $46 million around and winning 90-plus games. Yeah, if they call, don't pick up the phone. You're about to get shafted. And it happens when the Patriots call you, and when they ask about O.J. Howard, no matter my criticisms of him, because he's been obsolete. And, oh, by the way, I don't care. He's not playing well. He's not. People need to stop saying that. Coaches need to stop. He's not playing well. Anyhow, that said, we do know he has ability. Lots of it. We question how he's being used. We question a lot of factors. But if the Patriots call you and inquire about him, yeah, no, you've got a good player that you're not utilizing. Hang up the phone and figure out a way to utilize him. That's not good, right? You don't want to do it.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, if we're going to get out of this thing, the tight end position is going to have to become one of the premier targets in the offense. Godwin is going to produce. We know that much. Mike Evans is uneven. He's an uneven player right now. I mean, even the first interception, we talked about this openly last week. I don't know if it's his job just to turn around or to cut back in and fight for the ball, come back downhill. Bruce said it's on both of them. After film review, Mike should be 2 yards wider, and he should be fighting back towards the football in that situation on the first play from scrimmage against the Panthers. So you combine that with the fact that he drops a ball just before halftime.
It's a touchdown. It's a walk-in.
That he doesn't fight for the ball, high point it on the right sideline later in the second half. And he said himself, Mike did, that he played like crap. Well, that's fine, Mike, but it's well within your control.
Yeah, no, it's disappointing because that's the one area you thought we had a measure of consistency. Okay, that I know that guy's going to ball. I got no problems there. I know Godwin's a stud. Okay, we're good there. And if O.J. Howard shows up healthy this year, we're in good shape. Well, O.J. Howard is missing
absent
in action.
Yeah.
Evans is great, then terrible. Great, then terrible. It's one of those days he's just not going to get separation and try real hard. Other days, you're like, my God, this guy's a perennial all-pro. And Godwin is consistent, and he's the man in this offense, but it's pretty predictable when he's the lone guy that you're trying to get the ball to every other pass play.
Right, and then consider it this way. If you're Bruce and Todd Bowles, Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator, and you're going through the first, packet of the season, and San Francisco's a forgettable game, but the Thursday performance, Carolina, the Giants, then on the road to L.A., not great in New Orleans. But you're saying to yourself, you know what, Jameis, he's not losing us the games. We're not getting open at receiver consistently enough. I sure would like to see a couple more situations go our way. Maybe we need to block it up a little bit better. But I feel pretty good about the quarterback, and then that performance happens. Like, if you're in the coach's office, you go, well, Jesus.
Yeah, you're frustrated because there's no way in hell you lose the game to the Giants with the game that Jameis played there. You have a kicker who can't hit a 30-yard field goal. Screw him. You lose 32-31. Your defense allows a rookie quarterback to look like Joe Montana. Then Winston goes out and drops 55 on the road against the Rams in a game that everybody had pinned a loss for Tampa Bay. So you're feeling good. Prior to all that, of course, yes, you mentioned the San Francisco game, but let's not overlook a road win on a Thursday night, short week in Carolina. You're beginning to feel pretty good about where we're at there. Even still, it's interesting. 31-24 Saints Buccaneers. Look what the Saints have done to everybody. Mm-hmm. Look how they've dismantled and embarrassed offenses. I mean, it's pretty impressive. So in retrospect, you're like, that's not the end of the world performance.
Well, yeah, you got the ball one score down, and your third down play is a rub route to Bobo Effin Wilson, which thankfully he's no longer a part of the organization. But, what I'm saying is I think at that point, if you're in the coach's offices, not just the front office where you're thinking about extending the dude, you're like, okay, we're not perfect. This thing is moving in the right direction, and then bam.
Yeah.
Bam. So you get awful Jameis. Like you play Minesweeper, it would be like Minesweeper, and every single tile is a mine.
Yeah, you got everyone.
That's what you just got out of him. So you're like, well, shoot.
That's why I began the show the way that I did, is that, listen, we're coming off a bye week. We don't have a lot of meat and potatoes here, folks. This is a ask the question, almost rhetorically. It is sort of a, what do you think? I mean, what are we going to get? What is Arians going to do with Winston moving forward? How are we going to call the games?
That's going to tell you a lot.
It does tell you a lot.
Run pass splits, situational.
Listen, he came into the year saying we were going to run the ball. We've got to run the ball. You do not want – Winston has a bit of a hero complex anyhow, and he trusts his arm and his instincts too much, okay? So he makes these poor decisions. You got to take that off the plate within reason. You got to take it off the plate by having balance, the ability to run the football, and then let him make plays off of play action. If you look around the league, there's four quarterbacks that you say you entrust the game to, that you go, there you go, you go win it because you can. Tom Brady can do it. Aaron Rodgers can do it.
Yeah.
You know, but Mahomes, when he's healthy, can do it. There ain't many that you'd say, Russell Wilson can do it. You guys go win the game. Every other team goes out when they don't have that guy and says, okay, we got to have some balance here. We got to be smart. We can't ask our quarterback to throw it 50 times. He's going to lose. Goff can't go win you that game. Name another quarterback that can't. They really aren't out there. So that's the smart way to play it.
Well, I was listening to a little bit of Golic and Wingo this morning on ESPN Radio. I don't typically do that. But they had Dan Orlovsky on. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that dude sounds like Ryan Lochte doing like calculus explanations where you're like, really? So this is the guy that you want to put out there on all of your platforms. But he said something interesting, I think, insightful today. So I stopped. I picked up my jaw. And I listened, and it was about Carson Wentz and the issues with Philadelphia's offense relative to the way the offense looked for Nick Foles. And what he's saying is that Carson has a hero complex, right, that Peterson is designing plays. There are some plays in that playbook that demand you take the 4 or 5 yard hitch or whatever the hell it is.
That's
it's
right.
a check down. And Carson believes that he can get it 10 to 15 yards down the field on that play. The moment you do that, you are now out of rhythm with your play caller because you're betraying your play caller because they want you to take the way that the play is designed for something specific to be open. And if you're going to go freelance in that moment and try to make a bigger play, well, now I can't get into the rhythm of what I want to do. And I think there is some insight there as to the situation with Jameis. And it played with Dirk, of course, more than it has so far with Byron. But if you're trying to make the bigger play, rather than the one that's in front of you. And we've seen him turn down how many checkdowns here in Tallahassee and in the pros.
Well, and there's two reasons for that, though. The first is that what you just described, a hero complex, because he makes a lot of big plays when he goes for it. The other is that you don't want a reputation as checkdown Charlie. It's what got Mariota benched. He refused to throw the ball down the field. Everything became a checkdown. So the balance is so difficult to find.
It is, but I mean, think about, and I know he's the golden standard of all time, but think about how Brady and the Patriots offense looks. I mean, they come out the gate against the Jets, and everything is short, and it pisses you off as a fan rooting against the Patriots because you're like, well, Jesus. Yeah. Of course you can have that play if you want it, but then the next thing you know, after he jabs and jabs and jabs, you have something up the seams or something down the sidelines, and he makes an unbelievable throw. Jameis has those unbelievable downfield throws, but you've got to find a balance where second and six is okay, my man, or hell, second and 10. And Bruce said that this week in the media availability. He was asked, is there another quarterback in your time that had this same kind of hero complex? He goes, absolutely.
Almost Ben, all the good ones.
Ben Roethlisberger
did. I was
going
to say, yeah.
Ben always tried to make a play. He said Peyton would always throw it away. Ben would always try to make the play. And you got to find a way to communicate to him.
Well, I just think what the league has shown so far this year is that unless you're dealing with what looks to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, you're not going to find the kind of consistency at the quarterback position we're describing from anybody. Now, you can't have the five-pick game, but you're going to get average performances from the bulk of the quarterbacks in this league. Look around. Go team by team at their quarterbacks and tell me the guy that's not going to have the bad game that you can trust to go win it, not somebody else to lose it. He just doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think honestly, if I was to grade Jameis' performance so far through 6 weeks, I'd say it's a C plus.
Yeah.
And that's with the F minus performance in London.
Well, he seriously cost himself a high grade, yeah.
But the problem is this. What impact does that have on the way we call games? What impact does it have on the confidence of the locker room, the huddle?
Well,
I mean, you got to wait and see that part of it. Maybe the Carolina performance bleeds into other performances and you don't have that belief on the field and you could see that play out on a Sunday where you only get 8 or 9 cracks at this thing offensively.
These games will decide that. That's what we're entering into now, and it will be very interesting. I do think if you're Jameis and you're in Jameis's camp and you're pulling him aside, you're saying, look, man, everybody has seen the big play. They've seen the big game. You've had them. They know that's in there. What they don't know is whether or not you can have the kind of self-control and discipline necessary to not force the issue. Can you make better decisions to live to fight another day? And if that gets the Bucs beat, it's a different way of losing. Like, you lose because the defense can't get stops, not because you turned it over. Well, that gives you a chance to be here next year. Like, I'm just talking about it. If you're coming at it from his standpoint, you'd say, well, Winston's gone 4 straight games without a turnover, guys. They ain't losing because of him. It would be because they're not getting stops or whatever else. Something else would play to the surface. Sure. I have a feeling he'd be the defense. But you have to let that play out that way, Jameis. You can't. But the competitor in him, he wants to win the game. And he wants to look back at you and go, screw you. I'm going to try to win the game.
No, I mean,
you can't do that, man. It's the NFL. These guys know what's coming.
Well, it's all about that second consecutive fumble. The first one, I don't even blame that much because it's a blown-up smokescreen. Well, we run that play all the damn time. We ran it against Pittsburgh in the preseason.
The dude's literally putting his hand on the ball as he's –
So I let that – the next one, though, is like the nuclear play that's been there since Oregon and the Rose Bowl.
Just fall to the ground. I mean, it's really crazy, but just fall to the ground. Stop trying to make a play in that moment. It's not going to happen. It's weird, though. That's tough. Those are instincts that are tough to quell. Remember, Scuttlebucks listeners, the October fall savings are there for you now at BillCurryFord.com, including a 2020 Ford Explorer XLT lease for only $287 per month and 0% APR for 60 months on the 2019 Ford Ranger. All details are at BillCurryFord.com. And don't forget their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. The Bill Curry Ford showroom is just north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. BillCurryFord.com. Get in on those October deals now. All right, so we'll talk to Lita Kemper, JoeBucksFan.com next.
Slip skirt. Jeannie never wears no slip skirts. I don't ever wear no ripped shirts. Can't pretend that going on it never hurts. Knee pants. Jeannie never wears no knee pants.
Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
Bucks are a weird team, and one of the reasons I say that is if you're into innovative statistics and analytics, going above and beyond some of the things the NFL provides, almost everybody now to varying degrees uses a form of this. They're right in the middle. Team efficiency, for example, Football Outsiders has them as the 16th rated team in the league. It's if you want to look at more advanced statistics in each of the categories, obviously you know they're going to fare well when you go to team offense, because, and it's not just because of the Rams game, but as Lita Kemper pointed out the last time he was on the show, they were the leading scoring team in the NFC. Lee can't join us this week. Sorry, I may have referenced it before, but schedules conflicted. But the Bucks aren't elite. They do score a lot of points, but efficiency involves more than that.
Yeah,
those turnovers hurt you. But they're just behind Philadelphia, just behind the Rams, just behind, you know, teams that you might suspect have pretty good offenses. Hell, New England's 13th, and the Bucks are six spots behind. It's not like – it's weird, you know? I mean
– yeah, for me, I'd say if there was one thing I'd like to see tweaked on offense for this part of the season, it's I'd like to see a little bit more Ronald Jones. And the reason I never thought I'd say that in the preseason, but the reason I believe that now, he runs with a little bit more toughness than I ever expected he would. He was a one-cut guy at a USC, and he finished some runs, but you wonder, Pac-12 physicality, you know, is he just running over a bunch of small Pac-12 DBs, and is he just going to be like a speed back or a change of pace back at the NFL level? The way he started running in the preseason is the way he continues to run now, which is with a little bit of extra emphasis after the point of contact. Is he as tough as Peyton Barber is? No. But I do think we get away from him a little quickly. We clearly trust Peyton Barber more in pass protection, but we telegraph what we do offensively anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like Scotty Miller being one example, down and distance situations, after Jameis turns the ball over, we're telling you we're going to run the ball, and we still run the ball. Think about the way we somewhat iced the Carolina game, on the road, that is. And that's with a six-minute drive where you're running the ball, and they know what's coming next, and we still are able to do it at will, and that's with Peyton Barber. In that instance, Ronald Jones gets hurt, comes up lame with a toe injury, and that's why he's not on the field after breaking a big one in the third quarter. But moving forward this season, I'd like to see what he looks like in an ice the game situation, because he might be able to break one for 30 or 40 yards. Think about the Los Angeles performance. I think his the average number was probably around 4 yards a carry, but he had two or three called back that are next level plays game, that Peyton Barber simply cannot make. On the road at New Orleans, there are holes available to both backs. Ronald Jones could get you 5 to 10 more yards on those given plays, make them explosives, whereas Peyton would get you 6 or 7,
yeah,
but he can't get you 20.
There's a place for Peyton Barber, and he belongs on this group, in this group, as a two-back set, but he's not the guy. The guy has to be Ronald Jones. I agree with you. And let's use that to piggyback here a little bit and talk about what we think of the coaching staff up to this point. Now, look, it's awfully early. The number of data points you have aren't enough, in my opinion, to say definitively, yes, they're doing a great job, they're doing a poor job, or something in between. I think most people right now would say something in between. The early portion of the season, we were all in love with Todd Bowles. There was no doubt this secondary was playing better. They were certainly, as a defense, were much more aggressive, really, really, really vicious. That's one thing I liked about them. They hit you. And they still do against the run. They've been very,
Whitehead
very good against the run.
Whitehead is unbelievable in that regard. Yeah, he's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, well, we've got guys that'll hit you now, and they're utilizing personnel in a good way, against the run. It's just they're failing miserably against the pass, and I need Todd to figure something out to mitigate some of these games where people just do whatever they want via the air. Offensively, you know, it's going to be hard because we are so up and down. This offensive line's good, then they're not. Then they're decent, then they're terrible. Jameis, same player. Really good, then not good. Really, really, really good, awful. It's kind of up and down. We said it earlier, and I've been saying it for weeks. Again, our top receiver. I mean, come on, Mike. You got to be more consistent than this. Electrifying, game-changing, future Hall of Famer. Where is he? All of these things we've said about Mike Evans this year. Where is that guy? Godwin, Mr. Consistency, tough as nails, wish I had 11 of them. Those guys can all learn something from the way Godwin plays. Tight ends, missing in action. Missing in action. Don't know where you are. Backs, Jones, good.
You're right, Barber's fine.
It's serviceable.
I'd like to see what Ronald Jones looks like stat-wise if you give him a chance to get into a flow of a game a little bit more.
So I guess what we're asking is, how do you think Bruce Arians is doing? How do you think Todd Bowles is doing? Let's go down the line. Where are you at?
With Bruce, I mean, I think this team is closer to competing than it was certainly under the Dirk Cutter regime. I don't think they've packed it in or anything just yet. I do want to see how the offense responds, and we just talked about that. How do we call plays, and how confident does the group look on the field after this ridiculous 7-turnover performance, 6 of which are on the offense? But I think for Bruce, the number one glaring weakness – and he's got a few, but the number one glaring weakness is clock management. I mean, and situational management.
Use of timeouts.
Right. Los Angeles picks up 3 free points at the end of the first half that could have spelled doom out on the road in a score fest because we decide to use a timeout for an asinine reason. Mm-hmm. That's coming on the heels of a New York Giants decision.
Don't forget about the Carolina game earlier this year. Yeah, yeah.
Right, and then also the second weakness for Bruce is either take over play calling or get out of the way. The 3rd-and-2 play call down the stretch against the Giants where he calls a zone read. I know there's a pass option in there as well, but you call that play? I mean, like, seriously, let your OC or don't. Like, I get it that you don't want as much responsibility in your older age and you trust Byron Leftwich, but you say you trust him. That 3rd-and-2 play call is massively important, and it might have cost you the game right then and there before we even got to the missed field goal. So for Bruce, I think he's improved overall. He's raised the floor, so to speak, but I don't know moving forward if he's the kind of guy that can turn this thing around in a year, year and a half. I think there might be just...
Well, they got personnel issues for that to happen.
Yeah, but you... Yes, personnel issues, but when you have to overcome your coach in key situations at the end of first and second halves, and, I mean, listen, we're a Vernon Hargraves missed tackle away of McCaffrey from this being like a complete and utter disaster. If he doesn't bail him out there after 2 consecutive timeouts in that Thursday game, Bruce has made a lot of mistakes when it comes to clock management. And if you're personnel deficient, you can't be overcoming your coach. You have to be elevated by your coach to be bigger than you are.
Great points, fair points, and I tend to look at track record when assessing whether he'll be that guy moving forward or not. And of course, in his previous stops, he has been. Now, he can get somebody to help him with this clock management stuff because he clearly needs it, and you're 100% accurate with that. But if you go back and look, here's a little tidbit. Bruce Arians won 4 of 5 games after byes while he was in Arizona. His first year with the Cardinals, he went 6-2 the last half of the season. They turned it on after the bye week. If you look at his career, he's been a guy that has been able to do that as well. And good coaches typically do that. They fix and assess and make, you know, their team have an opportunity, or put their team, excuse me, in a position to succeed, because by now you have a pretty good handle on where your glaring weaknesses are, the areas of strength, the things that you have to coach around and mask, and the things you have to play to. And you've probably got a better handle on that locker room. You probably got a better handle on how guys respond to either fire and brimstone or armor on the shoulder. You've learned a lot about your guys individually as well as collectively. So I do think when you bring in a veteran coach like this, whose track record is winning close games and certainly winning a lot of games after the bye, you're left to hope that this continues a trend of his throughout an entirety of coaching that says, hey, I can trust this. Now, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't work. Maybe he goes out there and games passed him by and he's not connecting, doesn't have the personnel, and the Bucs go lose a bunch of games. Perhaps, but his track record says otherwise.
I agree. I'm stunned at his record in one-score games watching his clock management this year. I don't know how that's possible. Like, unless he's up 2 scores and there's a bunch of garbage time backdoor scores from his opponents to make those 1-score games to improve his record. But the one thing I will say that I really like about Bruce is I do believe he speaks from the heart mostly. And what I think that does is it connects with the locker room.
Connects with players.
And it doesn't allow for that locker room to be divided into factions that quit on a coach or whatever. And it also holds more people accountable. I mean, I think that's the culture of accountability. Yeah, we're limited personnel-wise, and I think that's where you have to give Todd Bowles an incomplete grade. I do like what we are against the run, but unfortunately, we're in a passing era in football, and Hargraves has to be run out there every week. And
no!
I know that Jameis Winston will generate the most clicks, the most listens, the most plays on all your media outlets, but Vernon Hargraves is the lightning rod of this team. For people who really watch Buccaneers football, 28's out there, and they say, nobody else. There's nobody even on the practice squad that
can
be more competitive
in
a
world
route.
That plays football.
Nobody.
Nobody. We can't find anybody
else. We have to
else?
Roll that guy out there, because pre-snap, two things have been our weakness through 6 games this season. Number one, covering the tight end. And so a quarterback in a third and big down situation says, all right, I'm going to go match up the tight end against whoever the hell they've matched up against it, because from Kittle all the way to Olsen, they've been able to expose that particular weakness. And then they look for 28. And then they say, and I think they might have flip-flopped now to where 28's the first place they look, and they say, oh,
yeah.
Well, would you look at that?
Look at this.
Michael Thomas on 28. Uh-huh. I think I'm going to go there
all
with the football.
All damn day. Byron Leftwich gets a B-minus to a C-plus for me, partly because of meddling from Arians, but also because Byron, you know, he's had moments where he's out-schemed future Hall of Famers. I mentioned it before. Obviously, what he did to Phillips out in L.A. was unbelievable.
Yeah, right.
But he's also, at times, and I don't know if this is a basic distrust for his quarterback, and this will be interesting to watch moving forward, he's decided at some points in the second half of games that I'm not going to let this guy lose the game for me. I'm going to hand the ball off 10 times in a row if I have to. And you just can't play like that. If you don't trust him to that degree, then you have to move on from him. And so there are moments where I'm saying, hey, I get it, man. You're worried about a red zone turnover, although historically Jameis doesn't have a lot of red zone turnovers. And you're going to run the ball 7 straight times down here inside the 15. Come on, man. You have set up play action perfectly. Let's utilize it.
At some point, yeah, I hear you. I think the Giants play was correct just because it was so successful. It's like, well, why would you get out of this? But overall, I know what you're talking about, which is you got to send a signal for the future. I mean, if you're not like in a real moment with yourself, you're just thinking about where this team is and you're saying, we may make a wild card berth, but this ain't going to win the Super Bowl. You probably want to build for the future in the relationships and establish some level of trust. But at the same time, you know, after this Carolina performance, Jameis has given you a reason to be very wary in key moments and what kind of calls you're going to make. And Jameis is the same way. I mean, he's been feast or famine. I think one of the greatest sequences of this season for him wasn't necessarily against LA on the road. It's that 6-minute drive to go down the field against Carolina, and we end up only kicking three because we have a dropped Perryman opportunity in the back of the end zone. But you've got a third down throw to Godwin, third and long. Mm-hmm. That's key. And then you've got a smoke route check on the quarterback who says, run's not good enough here. I've got Mike Evans in a one-on-one. That takes chutzpah, and that's the Jameis we like.
And he's executed those throws, too, this year. He's done better with the deep ball this year.
Much better.
And,
much
better. I need you to catch the ball, Mike.
Yeah.
A couple times now. I'm going to need you to catch the ball, Mike.
Yeah. I think the best thing Bowles has done, if you look at the way we protected in L.A., I don't even know where that came from. I haven't seen an offensive line performance out of Tampa. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But then the worst thing is some of these key play calls. And I don't know if Bruce is calling the third and two to Bobo against New Orleans or who is, but in big moments, it seems like we have really questionable. And I know if he doesn't succeed, you say it's questionable. But, I mean, really, you're going to drop a play for Bobo? In big situations, the best coaches of all time say it's players, not plays, right?
Yeah.
So are we calling a rub route for Bobo, or should we be calling some for Mike or Godwin?
Without being in the headset, I don't know who the primary was and what that
–
it had to have been, right? It looks like it.
There's no question.
It's a strange – I mean, it's hard to justify, and it's why I almost don't believe it, but the way the play looks, it had to
have been. He's rolling right. That's the only route that's breaking to the right.
You're right. But how could somebody have called that with a straight face and good conscience?
How do you call a zone read?
How does anybody not get on the headset and go, guys, really? I mean, we're running a play for Bobo? I mean, guys.
Right. You're just wondering about puckering in the moment. And that's where, at the very beginning of your discussion, where you cite that Bruce is good in one-score games. Yeah, he really is.
Oh, no. Career statistic. He's been unbelievable.
You wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it this year.
Hang in there, buddy. We're going to get a big win on the road this weekend.
I like when we get 45 minutes to talk all this.
Oh, goodness gracious. We've had it. Thanks for listening to the Scuttlebucks. Back for more in a moment. Choking on the smoke inside the lungs, screaming for the mercy of the burning
ones, but I know it's too late. Shopping for a used F-150, a car, or an SUV? Find Tampa's biggest and best used inventory at Bill Curry Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Shop now at BillCurryFord.com and see the nationwide lifetime warranty on pre-owned vehicles. Now, here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
So as we head to Sunday, 1 o'clock kick against the Titans, the look is really at the next four games or so. If you hold out hope that the Bucs can find a way to get back somewhere near 500 at about the, 10-game mark or somewhere like that, you're going to say Titans is a winnable game. Good defense there with Tennessee, so they're going to have to play smart. Not an explosive offense at Tennessee, so okay. All right. Come on now. That's a winnable game. Might even be a good matchup, frankly. Bucks, Seahawks, you're not going to beat Russell Wilson because you won't get to the passer, and he'll buy time, and our secondary's garbage. Cardinals, Bucks, you ought to beat the Cardinals. Saints, Bucks, and Tampa, yikes. That's a team right now you can argue is the best team in football.
Yeah.
You could argue it. I mean, I think New England probably
is. They'll have their guy back, too. By then, for sure. Well, he might play this week.
Hell, they don't lose without him.
Yeah, it's true.
Teddy Bridgewater should be starting at about 25 teams in the league right about now, and I'm serious. Bucks, Falcons, that should be an automatic win. The Falcons are just about done, really ready to quit. We play well in Atlanta every year for whatever reason, and right now everybody scores 1,000 points on Atlanta. So Quinn's going to get fired. It's fun to watch the Falcons just implode like this. Bucks, Jags, okay. All right, well.
It's doable.
It's a doable game. Colts, Bucks, you're going to lose to the Colts. Bucks, Lions, you're going to lose to the Lions. Texans, Bucks, you're going to lose to the Texans. And then you get the Falcons at the end of the year. So,
so you got 7-9 is what you just did.
I'll take 7-9, 8-8. If the quarterback plays better, I'll do that. I'll do that. And then maybe you get a few lucky bounces and some things happen. We came into the season saying that, right?
Yeah. I think Detroit is a – I know it's on the road there and it's late in the season, but
we'll see what they still have to play for.
Right.
Yeah. They got screwed early on a couple of games they should have won, and they had heartbreaking defeats, some of that at the hands of the officials. You're right. What are they playing for?
Well, and they just traded one of their starting safeties out to a Diggs. They traded him out to Seattle.
Why can't we pick up their starting safety? What are we doing sitting around here watching good defensive players get traded all over the league, and we don't ever bite?
I can't answer that question.
Jesus, man. We can't cover anybody. Anyhow.
Kerryon Johnson's also out for them. He's on injured reserve with a knee injury. That may affect my fake team. But yeah, you know, for me, I think the stretch you're looking for here is 4-2 the next six. And I know that's crazy. I'm just going to hold on to hope, and maybe it'll get me into November. But it starts this weekend. It starts with the win at Tennessee this weekend.
Oh, you got to win that one, yeah.
I do think if you're still in the thick of it, let's say 5-6 going on the road to Jacksonville, that's a winnable game. People kind of figured out Minshew. That was fun for a little while. Now it's about Fournette, but we do stop the run. I mean,
that's what I meant. That's what I meant about the Tennessee matchup being pretty good. Like, they want to run the ball. Obviously, I really wish Mariota was in there because you wouldn't have to worry about the downfield throw. But Tannehill's an athlete. I thought he was an average to decent quarterback in Miami, so he can hurt you with his legs as well.
I worry about A.J. Brown's size, too. That dude is a tight end in a wide receiver's body. He looks like a young Anquan Boldin, just in frame. I don't know about productivity. That's a Hall of Fame
certainly
type
not
career.
Hand strength.
No. Nobody has stronger hands than Anquan Boldin.
No.
I mean, geez.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you come up and you're able to stop Derrick Henry this weekend, that tells me that if you're still in it when you're going on the road against Jacksonville, you're going to stop Leonard Fournette. Similar type size and approach to the game. Fournette, of course, a little bit more explosive. But that's the key part to this year. If you're trying to think about playing a couple of games in December, where even if it's false, you're still in that in the mix column of the NFL playoff picture, in the hunt. Like, if you want to be a part of that, then it starts with a win on Sunday, and it starts with a 4-2 stretch here in the next six. But we need to see the quarterback play with consistency, and he needs to earn that contract back. I'm not talking about the max one. I'm talking about any kind of contract beyond a franchise tag. He's got to play for that and earn it because it's not in his corner right now.
It would certainly be helpful that other elements of your team begin to play better that relieve pressure off the quarterback. You know, you ought not need 30 points a game. You know, if you can play a little defense, that'd be great. That'd be great in the back end here. Can Todd Bowles get something going with this secondary where they make stops?
I don't think so. I think Pierre Paul is a better pass rush, a natural pass rush without having to dial up blitzes that never get home anymore, by the way.
Well, they figured that out real quick.
Yes, they did.
It was original, and it was great. It was awe-inspiring even for about 3 weeks.
I believe Bruce said, too, I don't listen to him anymore about a lot of things. And after about 3 weeks, he said, I don't think Shaq's used all of his moves yet, not even close. Well, okay, great. He might want to start using those new ones.
Got to use them. Break them out, Shaq.
And the blitz packages, I don't think we've used anywhere close to, you know, the blitz package.
Let's start seeing them.
Well, you know,
let's
what?
Go dial them up, baby.
We must be saving them for Nashville. That must be it, man.
Get those exotics out. Let's make it happen.
But if you can get Pierre Paul back in the mix with Barrett, then it's like, who do you double team? You know, because if he shows he's healthy, I just wonder if he'll be available this weekend. Again, the key is to look out Wednesday night into Thursday about the reports, how he's responded to full contact work. If so, then he might come in for 20-30 snaps.
As we sign off, a reminder that Scuttlebucks listeners, the October fall savings are there for you now at BillCurryFord.com. That includes a 2020 Ford Explorer XLT lease for only $287 per month. That's 0% APR for 60 months on the 2019 Ford Ranger. All details are at BillCurryFord.com. Check it out. Don't forget their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. The Bill Curry Ford showroom is just north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. BillCurryFord.com. Get in on all those October deals. Good stuff there. All right. Well, you know, I'm not going to predict a win or a loss. I don't know what we're going to do.
I'm feeling a loss because Tannehill was the backup quarterback for most of the year. And just a funny thing now.
Yeah, but you know what would have been worse is that they just announced it this week that he was going to be replacing Mariota.
That's true.
Then we had no chance. The backup quarterback syndrome that comes in and gets a win and plays great, that happened a week ago. They somehow got a win against the Chargers they didn't earn. So there you go. The two touchdowns called back on the field, and then the fumble happens. They got it. Now the magic comes our way.
Also, if the punt returner catches every punt,
yeah,
right, we will win 50 new yards of hidden field
position. Oh, my God. Just seeing somebody other than Bobo back there.
It'll do my heart well.
Oh, you'll feel a measure of confidence you haven't sensed in ages.
But I guarantee you we're going to have two or three routes designed for Scotty Miller down the field this weekend. And so it'll be right back to the point where I'm screaming.
Why are we throwing to Scotty Miller? I have said that in my living room on numerous occasions. So we're going to call that for Scotty Miller on 3rd and 8? Where are you, Mike? Yeah, it's tough. Our thanks to all of you for listening each week. Good work out of you, Tom.
Hey, Byron, let's get a rub route for Scotty Miller here.
Let's get Scotty.
The game's on the line. Yeah, I know.
We really got to get the ball to Scotty Miller.
They wouldn't see it coming.
No way they predict Scotty Miller is going to be making plays.
So let's run him out there to the huddle, gain their attention by doing so, and then design a play for Scotty. Mm-hmm. I bet he'll be open.
Let's just run the go with Scotty. Let him run right by.
That's why I hired you. Brilliant.
Thanks for listening to the Scuttlebucks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Go Bucks.